I am so glad you could join us. I'm your host, Mo Gaudat. This podcast is nothing more than a conversation between two good friends sharing inspiring life stories and perhaps some nuggets of wisdom along the way. This is your invitation to slow down with us. Welcome to Slow Mo. Welcome back. My guest today is Shahzad Younes, who is the founder of Muz, which you would absolutely know about if you're a Muslim. You would know nothing about if you were not. It is the world's largest Muslim dating site, if dating is the right word to use. He used to be an investment banker and then realized this is not what he wanted to do with his life. And what a journey. If you know the story of how business works in the background for some of those things that you end up having in your hand, it would blow you away. So excited to have a conversation about not only how he ended up here, but why he ended up here. And, you know, how different some of our cultures are when it comes to love, dating, and romance. So I hope you'll enjoy this conversation with Shahzad Younes. Shahzad, thank you very much for being
here. You're very welcome.
I normally avoid talking specifically about any religion. I talk a lot about spirituality, but I talk a lot about culture differences and sort of, if you want, acceptance and inclusion and diversity. And it is quite shocking for quite a few people when they realize the difference between the West and the East, the Muslim community specifically, when it comes to dating.
Yeah.
I heard you once say that Muslims don't date, they marry.
Yeah, exactly so, that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably the simplest way I could describe the difference to a non-Muslim.
Right? Yeah.
Because I remember, you know, early in the days of Muz, you know, we were trying to raise investment. And it's so strange. I tried to pitch to Muslim investors and I don't necessarily think they didn't get it. But they didn't think it could be that big. Yeah. So for whatever reason.
I didn't either. So, if you had pitched me.
I'm sure. Yeah. And I still some people now who get in touch going, oh, I'm so sorry. I got that so wrong. Yeah. Which is nice to prove people wrong. But I remember pitching it to non-Muslim investors. And I was like, how can I describe it to them in a way that they would just get it? And that was the simplest way, you know. Yeah. So they didn't understand the culture difference. Like for Muslims, you know, ultimately, if I'm getting to know a girl, you know, if I'm fairly practicing, my goal is I want to get married. You know, we're not here just to date for the hell of dating. It's like we want to marry. So for me, it was a simpler way of describing it. Muslims don't date, we marry. And that's it, you know.
Can I ask you a philosophical question? Mm. What's the difference?
Intent. I think intent comes down to everything. So the concept of marriage, generally speaking, it's your partner for life, you know, until you get divorced. Exactly. Then you start again. But within reason, it's partner for life. It's the construction of a family unit. It's, let's say if you like I said, to subscribe to what a family unit is and marriage, etc., kids, the whole thing, right? And the framework, you know, for all of that. Now, in the Muslim faith, that's the heart of a community. You know, it's the heart of the social fabric of society, the family unit. Family unit only exists when you have, like I said, parents, children, etc., and that whole framework. So if you're looking to get to know someone, you're quite upfront. I'm getting to know you for the sake of getting married. Okay. And what that means is, necessarily, I'm not going to get to know you for 2 years, because within reason, that's just dating. Right? Like, time is somehow, you accelerate things, there's an element of seriousness. So if I'm getting to know someone, you probably ask some of the tough questions up front. All right, well, where would you like to live? What are your views on in-laws? When are you actually planning to have kids? You're asking all, you know, I've met people and day one, they've asked me those questions, right? And that's good because it means that they're serious about it and they're thinking about it. So, you know, whereas if you're just looking to date and, you know, we're just chill, we'll just see what happens, you know? What happens is generally, you know, you'll be hanging out, you'll probably get to know each other, things will get physical, you know, and obviously Islamically, there's no element of any physical relationship before marriage, right? Yeah. Marriage is when all that fun stuff happens. So if you're focusing on, as a Muslim, getting married and getting to know someone for the sake of marriage, you already have your boundaries and your framework in place of how you're going to do that, you know, your method, if you will. Without all of that, of course, things might get physical. You might end up having kids and you both are still like, well, we have no idea what is our situation here. You know, a kid has arrived now. What do we owe this child? What framework is a child going to grow up, etc.? And there's a whole complexity involved. you know, I don't want to say if you do it the right way. If you do it the Islamic way, it prescribes this is the route that yields the least stress. Yeah. And this is Islamically the way you build a society. And, you know, if you're practicing Muslim, you adhere to that. And that's the way you would get to know someone. So for me, it's intent. You know, that's the heart of it.
So the whole idea of the number one priority of getting together in a religious setting is we're here to build a family unit, to attempt to build a family unit.
And provide security to each other.
Yeah.
So you might equally remember, let's say, you know, if we look at a hetero relationship, which, you know, Islamically, that's the, you know, the orthodox, let's say, you might not be able to have children. However, the man owes a certain set of rights and responsibilities to the woman and vice versa, you know, in a Muslim framework. So what it does is it gives protection to the man and the woman.
Yeah, but in a typical Western style dating relationship, however, there could be many other. That would be one of the objectives.
Yep,
like sometimes, you know, my best friend is sort of looking for her man to build a family with, right? And that could be one of the objectives. But then if you pull down menu, there are so many other objectives.
Of course,
here for fun. I'm here for whatever, right? And of course, that's acceptable in a Western approach to dating, but in an Islamic approach to dating, it's not.
And the thing is, I've been in this industry, if you will, for 9 years now, and the thing I was, you know, if you look at it, for the most part, the male and the female experience could not be more different in dating apps or in finding someone online or even the process of finding a partner. I'm sure we'll go into some of the nitty-gritty of it. One thing I realized, though, however, is if you look at modern dating apps or modern mainstream dating apps, without naming any, for the most part, they're games. They're not dating apps. They're games. They're games. They're heavily gamified in the way that they're designed, in the way they are designed to keep you on the app. You know, the heart of it isn't to solve the problem of getting you married or getting you to a partner and getting you off the platform. Most of it is keep you on the app. Keep you swiping, keep you chatting to people, keep you making new matches, etc. Because then it keeps you on the platform, keeps you as a paying member, etc. And that's, you know, the real heart of a lot of those businesses. For us, you know, our goal, you know, one of our core principles we've literally written down is we want you to get married and get off the app. We don't want to build a product that keeps you on the app. Because what's the point? That's not the product that I'm interested in. I want to solve your problem. You know, and we have 500,000 people around the world. We've solved the problem, which is a huge number. For me, it's focusing on how do you help someone find a partner. You know, we're not perfect. There's loads of stuff we've learned. You know, as a business, you're always figuring things out. You know, you're trying different approaches. Some things work, some things don't. But the key for us is keeping that in mind. How do we actually help you find a partner?
But that doesn't work for your business, does it?
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. But so this is why I don't have this opinion. So people have said this. Investors have said this. And this is why the reason a lot of investors don't like dating apps. Because if you do your job, you lose your customer, right? And that's why they hate it. That churn effect is great. For me, it's the best thing ever because what it proves and what we've proved is we genuinely solve the problem. We are the place where Muslims are meeting. You know, our goal is transforming how Muslims meet and marry. And that's what we're doing, right? So if you're Muslim and you find a partner and you get married, trust me, everyone at the wedding will know how you two really met, you know?
And
people talk exactly that. The market, you know, there's 2 billion Muslims around the world. So even though we're the biggest in the world, we're still tiny, you know, we're a drop in the ocean compared to the size of the market and in my eyes, size of the opportunity. So for me, the best thing that can ever happen is we prove time and time again to people, this actually works. You actually do find your partner and get married through our app, through Muzz. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that speaks, you know, better than any marketing, any billboard we could ever do, you know, and even now we're 9 years in and, you know, 60, 70% of all of our daily signups, they come organically. People are telling their friends, people are just hearing about it, people are searching for us, etc., which is amazing. You know, 9 years in, that's pretty strong.
I totally agree. I wrote a book that I'm not going to publish, sadly. I know a lot of people will be upset about that. That's called Finding Love. And for Finding Love, I did, like the engineer that I am, quite a bit of work on understanding dating apps. And I really did it with my experience as a salesman, as a businessman, and as an engineer. So a lot of data and knowledge and constant attempts until I nailed it, like almost to the point where I would know exactly based on a woman's ethnicity and, you know, age profile and so on. If I sent a message, 9 out of 10 will say hi, right?
And it's a
science in a way. And then I decided in that chapter, chapter 12 of the book about dating apps, that the chapter is going to be 4 lines, which is don't use them.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And I think it's mainly because of what you just said. There is what Freakonomics, the book, would call a conflict of interest. Basically, the interest of the app is to keep you, and your interest is to find someone and go away. Yeah. But also because I have to admit the economics. In the global dating app, you know, a Tinder or whatever, the number of profiles is so large. The economics work against you completely because you have to sift through.
Yep.
Countless profiles, like it's impossible to, in a meat market like experience, where basically all I know about her is a picture, right? Even the actual design of the app is hiding anything that's useful, really, right? I mean, not all of them. There are some that are better than others, and some that are actually, I think, reasonably function. But the typical design is, like you said, I think it's very eye-opening. It's a casino.
Yeah, yeah, okay? And it's very superficial. Like
a slot machine.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And you're just, you know, swiping, and hoping that someone will show up and that she will be on the app, not just an old profile, and that she will respond, and then you will have a nice conversation. How is that different when... I'm guessing if it's an Islamic thing, we're not expecting the users to meet for a drink on the first time and then, you know, sleep together on the third time. We don't expect that. Yeah. We expect a much more matchmaking-like experience. Is that how it is?
So I guess probably the biggest difference with our app, the profiles are extremely rich. So we ask, oh my God, I think it's about 30 bits of information from you when you sign up, and you have to do it. Like you can't just say I'll give you a photo and then let me browse. No, not at all. You have to fill the whole thing in, and we kind of narrowed it down to if you're looking for someone for a life partner, what are the things that as a Muslim matter to you? So we literally ask you, when are you looking to get married? You know, because
you do.
Yeah, so that's a straight up question. Because what we found is, and I heard this a lot from women especially, they'd be like, all right, I'm getting to know this guy. This was before we had this field. And for the woman, she's like, I'm looking to get married like as soon as possible. If I meet the right person and we're all happy, let's crack on, right? On one bit of data as well, for people who find their partner on us, it takes them 6 months from signing up to leaving and have found their partner, found the one. So that's very compressed for a lot of people in terms of the whole time. And that's end to end. You know, that's not just, you know, by then they would have met a few times, the families probably would have met, and they're probably like, we're ready to get engaged here, you know, like, let's crack on. And that's when they leave the platform. So 6 months. To go back a bit, sorry. So what we found was a lot of women were matching with guys, for example, having a chat, whatever. And then they find out, oh, the guy's not looking to get married for another 2 years. So they're already not aligned on that. And she's like, I don't want to wait 2 years. I'm looking for someone now. Great. So that was one of the things we added. We added so many different things that matter to Muslims in terms of education, profession, ethnicity, ethnic background, religiosity. How often do you pray? How would you describe yourself in terms of religion, personality types, etc., etc.? So quite a lot. One other thing that we have on the app is photos almost optional. So especially for women, you can opt to have your photos private, and then you can decide when you want to show them. So what that means for a guy, let's say, if you're looking at a woman with private photos, you're judging the profile. You're not judging her photos and her looks. For a lot of women, that element of privacy, modesty is important to them. You know, there still is in the Muslim community, different Muslim communities, a taboo around being online. Fine. And there's also an Islamic principle around modesty, just in general. And everyone's on a different wavelength on whatever that means. So for us, it's providing features specifically listening to Muslims of how they want to find a partner and respecting it. What we don't want to do is, and I think what a lot of other apps do is almost say, here's a generic app, let's just put a Muslim badge on it and then market it to Muslims. Like, not at all. So, you know, for us, things like having a chaperone in the product as well, no one ever did that. I remember having...
What's that?
So you can add... There's an Islamic principle of a wali or a chaperone, so particularly for women. So if a woman's meeting a guy, she shouldn't meet a guy alone. She should meet with a third party. Mainly for her protection. Make sure someone's there to look after her interests, make sure she's protected, etc. So it comes from a good place. And I remember when I first launched the app, this didn't exist anywhere online. And I actually thought, hold up, I could build this as a feature in the app, you know? So we were the first app ever to have a chaperone feature. And now others have copied us.
Online.
Online, yeah. So when you're talking to someone, it's kind of very obvious there's a third party present. They have access to the conversation, etc. And again, encourages good behavior. So there are a lot of women who've told us as well that they add a chaperone in because it encourages the guys to be more sensible when talking. Amazing. It serves its purpose. Things like that, we really, you know, my motto is always embrace the quirks of how Muslims find a partner. You know, that's how you solve this, because there's no point trying to force Muslims us into kind of a more of a generic stroke Western mindset with this. The way we do it is different, and that's okay. Respect it, try and build a product around it. And that's what we try to do.
Most of my audience will not be Muslims. Mm. So I'd like to take this conversation in a way that is a little bit comparative, if you want. So there are upsides and downsides to the way Muslims find their partner, right? The upsides are, it's not as hectic, I would tend to believe, to find someone as it is in the Western approach. Because in the Western approach, where the priority is, oh, I need him to be romantic, I need her to have blue eyes, I need this, I need that, I don't think these are the most important qualities in any arranged marriage, whether Muslim or Hindu or Sikh or whatever, in this side of the world, the Eastern side of the world, if you want. But at the same time, it also makes the candidates very inexperienced about love and romance. The process of choice is very logical, almost like an arranged marriage.
Can be a bit cold.
It is a bit cold, right? Statistics, however, show that those arranged marriages end up lasting way longer, that 90% of them last 10% break, when the Western style marriage normally 50-50, right? Mm. What do you think, if you're open, not protecting your app, but if you're open about the Islamic approach to dating versus the Western, what could Islam learn from the West, and what could the West learn from the Islamic approach?
Good question. So I've thought about this a lot. One thing I hear, and you hear a lot from Muslim women, Muslim guys don't know how to talk, right? Yeah.
They're not very much in touch with their emotion.
Their emotion, all of this. And sometimes, and I've said to some women, like, I say to each other and to Muslims in general, we shouldn't give ourselves a hard time, right? Because, as you mentioned, if you think about it, you know, you're generally, there's quite a lot of segregation between the genders from a young age, pretty much, let's say.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have the whole concept of boyfriend, girlfriend stuff, you know. And then you're almost thrown into, you need to go and find a partner, you know. And this is one positive, family helps, right? So the family are extended family, friends, network, etc. You know, they're, you know, I have a daughter, we have a son, great, maybe the family should meet and see if they like each other, that kind of stuff. So you have a lot of familial help, whatever that word is, which helps in terms of options for you. The problem as such is you're thrown into a relationship, right? So like you said, you're all right, are you two suited? Great, get married. Now figure out your life together. And that's hard, because for the guy, he's never been with a woman before, and vice versa. So this is a whole new, they've never lived with someone of the opposite gender, right? So all these things they're navigating right at once with a brand new partner, with a marriage, right? So like you're here for life type thing, right? And I think this is why we're at this interesting point in time, I think. So like you said, I think that's a problem, in that men and women, Muslim men and women, don't have a good social education. If you look at Westerners, if you will, people in the West, yeah, they might date, they might live with someone of the opposite sex, they go through that whole social education of being with someone, right? All the arguments, the things that happen, right? Of compromise, of figuring out how do I live with someone, I'm messy, she's tidy, all that kind of stuff, right? You navigate all of that, and that's an education. And so you learn how to, through all those relationships, you learn how to be with someone, you know? You probably learn a lot about yourself, never mind someone else. I think for Muslims, you skip all of that. You know, your learning starts the moment you get married, which is a big ask. Yeah. So I think there I think Muslims need a lot more help on that perspective. What does that mean? I think parents and even religious figures and communities, Muslim communities, need to be a lot more open about talking about how to be with
someone.
That whole education is crucial.
But then if they talk about those things, I mean, specifically if they talk about sex education, it's sort of like bringing
it's like encouraging it. Yeah. And this is the fine balance. I think there's a way to do it. I mean, this is a crazy thing. Islam was actually very open and pro talking, openly, respectfully about sex and relationships.
Totally, 100%.
Right? It was never this taboo. It never had, you know, if you look at, you know, the old religion, if you will, you know, Christianity back then had a huge taboo around sex, right? And that whole framework, it was considered shameful, etc. Islamically, that was never the case.
I mean, sex and marriage and, sorry to say, thing is all over the Quran.
Exactly, right? Yeah. It's like, but it's done and expressed in a way with a lot of respect and dignity, right?
Yeah.
To the conversation. And even when the Prophet, peace be upon him, talked about it, he talked it in a way that was, it wasn't vulgar.
It was helpful.
It was helpful, respectful, and direct almost of how.
Yeah, I mean, again, for our non-Muslim listeners, you know, the Quran specifically speaks about, you know, foreplay.
Yeah, it's exactly. Like, the importance of it.
Of it, right?
And imagine that in, I mean, I'm not saying this remotely as an expert, but early Christian literature, that conversation wasn't being had, right?
Yeah, but then the scholars sort of like tabooed that completely. It's almost like, let's not talk
about
this it.
So this is the problem. I think the scholars, yes, have made it a more difficult conversation than it needs to be. I would say more of a modern concept of harsh segregation. Because there wasn't, you know, back in the day, if you will, there wasn't this harsh segregation.
There wasn't at all. Yeah.
There wasn't. There was respect between genders. There was a good way of operating respectfully. And everyone knew their boundaries, right? And respected, for the most part, those boundaries. The problem now is either people have such little faith in themselves that, like, the only way we can be sensible is complete segregation, which isn't the answer, you know? So I do think there's a sensible middle ground of how genders get to know each other in a respectful way. Like, I'm talking about Muslims specifically, right? So I think that's a lot they can learn from the West and from non-Muslims, right? How to do that, but like I said, within a respectful boundary, because Islamically there are those boundaries. I think that would be definitely one aspect I think Muslims could learn from non-Muslims, and I think would help in terms of Muslim men being a lot better at having conversations with Muslim women. And this is before marriage. How do you discuss emotions? How do you talk about what you would like in a partner and what's actually important in a relationship? Because they don't know. They think they know, but they don't know. Flip side equally, and this is why I think it's a super interesting time now. You know, we're now a generation where, like you said, these Western romantic notions being swept off your feet, all this kind of stuff. Muslim men and women want that as well, because they see it, right? They watch all the movies. They're, you know, we're all impressionable. So we have this marriage that happens quite quickly, and then we're like, well, where's that romance, the immediate romance? And sometimes you have, you know, Muslim marriages that don't work, that you know, end in divorce quite quickly because that didn't happen, right? And there was this, you know, some would say it's an immature expectation, but whatever, an expectation. So I think that's an element that you know, we almost need to learn as well as Muslims, in terms of the true value of what marriage is for. And it's something that you work at, you know, which is easier said than done. And everyone has their own situation. I think for non-Muslims looking at Muslims in terms of, you know, possibly things they can learn, I do think, you know, I remember explaining this whole concept to quite a few non-Muslims, and they were like, man, I wish there was an app like that for non-Muslims, you know, which was very upfront of when do you want to get married, and very direct of what are you looking
That's
for.
That's such exactly? an interesting idea, actually.
You know, and it doesn't really exist. There isn't something where it very clearly asks you.
That is based on honesty and transparency. Yeah. It's like, look, you know, I want a one-night stand, and there it is, and I don't need to lie about it.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
basically,
yeah.
If that's what you want to, then we're perfect partners, and there or are I
some
want kids.
Yeah, yeah, and there are some apps for that, no question, right?
Yeah.
The problem is, I think, and I guess there are different apps for everything, I would say. But, you know, things, like I said, that male-female dynamic, there's always one power which is a lot more stronger, you know, which is the male dynamic, right? Whether we like it or not.
Not on typical dating apps. No,
not on dating apps. So I mean more in reality of men taking advantage, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I do think that's it's one thing to navigate, let's say. But I think you're right. In terms of, call it dating apps, women are in control. You know, women have the power on dating apps, because they, you know, if you look at it, and the metrics are remarkably similar. So men will like one in two profiles, right? So every other profile they're showing.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. The data shows women will like one in 11. So that's just different. Yeah, yeah. And for the mainstream,
I thought the numbers
apps,
were more extreme than that.
Well, at least on our app, that's the data. On, I think, mainstream dating apps, to some degree, probably a bit more extreme. But generally, it's similar.
I remember once sharing my dating profile. So I tried all of them.
Okay.
Because I was doing my research.
Yeah. And, research.
mainly for research. But all, honestly, I mean, to me, there was being a public figure and being out there is a bit like, what are you doing
yeah,
here?
Yeah,
and, you know, every now and then, a woman would go like, are you really Mo, right?
Yeah. It's just a catfish.
But then I have to admit, you know, in many ways, some of those apps I remember once showing my dating profile to a lady friend, and I said, look at, I've nailed this. Yeah. I have like, you know, hundreds of matches and all of that interest. And she looked at it and said, I had that in the first 3 hours.
That's the key. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Women get so much attention so quickly.
Yeah.
Men, you work for it. And if you're tall, man, how tall are you?
Don't talk about
that. There you go. Tall men get a lot of attention.
I'm actually on the edge of being tall. I'm the only one dissatisfied of being
tall. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Women are like, if you were 1 centimeter shorter,
okay.
If you were 1 centimeter shorter, we would have said no, but you're like around there.
Yeah,
but
but
that's the interesting. I mean, the interesting thing is that, once again, it is a meat market.
Even though
we don't see it that way, we think that it's only the women's profiles. But women will only.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get 100 matches a minute
or
an hour or a day, you know, you basically are saying, okay, why would I settle for anything other than 185 centimeters tall?
And I do think, and you know, one, and this is another, call it flip problem as well. If you're looking for marriage, right, you're very set on a lot of things that you want in someone. So I would say looks is probably one bit, but then they have to have it all. They have to have a good job, good profession, a good income, good family setup, blah, blah, blah. All these things. Because why? Because I'm not looking today. I'm looking for the one.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be a lot more fussy over the one. And this can make it difficult as well, that you have a lot of, you know, we say in the Muslim community, there's a crisis of older Muslim women who can't find a partner.
Yeah, of course.
And why is that, right?
So everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's even more in the fast-paced Western society.
Yeah. And you're dead right.
Sure.
And so I actually don't think we're that different on that perspective. Older women have a tougher time out there. Why? Because older men will go for younger women because they can, in theory, right? And so they will, for the most part. I'm generalizing here, but that's what the data generally shows. So that's the problem. We have it same in the Muslim community, right? If you're a Muslim woman who's divorced, even harder. If you're a Muslim woman divorced with kids,
almost impossible.
Nearly impossible, exactly, right? And then you have the whole thing of, which we found, and I always find this really interesting, and, you know, again, this is kind of a social dynamic, right? For a lot of Muslim men, not interested. Divorced with kids, not interested. So a lot of older Muslim women, let's say with kids, etc., who are divorced, are then saying, right, I'm open to marrying a non-Muslim. Because they're the only people who at least will accept my situation.
How is that on the app? Does the app allow non-Muslims?
No. So the way we've kind of positioned the app as such, and what we permit is, if you're serious about marrying a Muslim, then you're allowed on the app. So you might not be a Muslim, but if you're clear about that and you're not messing around and you're behaving sensibly and you're looking to marry a Muslim, we don't have a problem with that. You know, we've had people who have been curious about Islam who joined the app and actually converted after speaking to someone. So, you know, I never want us to be a blocker for people as long as they're sensible on the app. That's the key.
That's interesting.
You know, so we have a set of behavior guidelines that you agree to, an oath, if you will, of behavior. As long as you adhere to that and you're respectful, you're serious, then we're like fine.
So here's the question. If I put on my computer scientist hat and look at this, then in a very interesting way, your app should be, answer this questionnaire. Here are your top three candidates.
And
go meet all three of them. Pick one. That's the end of it.
So, yes, here's where I don't know if I'm cynical. I don't believe there's a science of why two people get on or not. Mm-hmm. I remember that I read this study and it said how this lady who did this, I've forgotten her name, but basically she said effectively there's two types of people. The opposites attract people, where opposites do attract and it works. And there's equally similarities attract. And you're either one or the other. And maybe there's a way to determine which one you are.
Yeah, I wrote about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, there are two dynamics between any two, you know. I don't call them genders, I call them polarities. So
I look
at the feminine and the masculine, and even in the, you know, LGBTQ plus community and so on, there will be a polarity where you will have one side more feminine and the other side more masculine, feminine, masculine here being sort of traits, you know, approaches to life, if you want.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting because I wrote a chapter exactly about that sensuality, sexuality, fun, playfulness, the joy of the couple, as well as their ability to cover more spectrum of life, basically, requires that they are opposites.
Yeah.
So the more opposite you are, the more he turns you on, you turn him on, the more, you know, you can find one of you that is playful and wants to have a wonderful vacation, but the other one that's organized and makes sure that it, right? But then on the other hand, if you're looking for a partnership in whichever form, including a family and kids and so on, you know, harmony is, you know, stability. Yep. If you want predictability are very important things that you're looking for. And so, you know, someone who's very opposite might not be the best match for that.
And equally, I think there's another study done, I think by, it might have been by OkCupid a long time ago, but effectively, people don't fully know what they want.
Yeah.
So people, for example, they'll set a bunch of filters and preferences that they're really interested in. And then what they found was if somebody outside of all that actually expressed an interest in you, most people are willing, if their profile looks half sensible, most people are willing to say, all right, let's see where this goes. Someone's shown an interest in me. Let's see what happens. Even though they're outside of my filters. And we, so we literally have a section in the app where we ignore most of your filters intentionally.
Do you?
Yeah, and we show you who's interested in you. Because, and we've had weddings, we've had so many weddings from that whole section. And I remember one lady was like, literally, thank God for that. Because all of my filters, I would never have seen my husband because he was not what I was looking for. But then she saw in the section that he liked her. Somehow she said something about him. I felt like, let's just see where this goes and have a chat. There you go. They got talking, got on really well and got married. And she was, you know, for her, that was one example. And there are plenty of others. So definitely, I do, that's why I'm always cynical with the whole, we've got the science of how we're going to match you and all this stuff. Because I feel like it's a lot of fluff. You can have all this science. You put two people together in a room. You can't, I don't think you can predict will they get on or will they not. And not just get on. I think people can be civil for the most part. Because there's something in you that's really attracted to someone. Right? There's energy, whatever you want to call it. Whenever you meet anyone, you know, be it in a friendship basis or romantic, there's always something where you're like, I don't want to be in this room with this person. Like, I can all be nice and it's all polite, but I'd rather not see them again ever. Or, you know, of course we all have it, right? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or you're like, you know what? There's something about them I just really liked.
And I think that applies to women. Men don't do that.
Of course.
You know, men, if she's attractive, then men
are simple creatures. Yeah. Men are very visual. You're right. Men are very visual. And I don't want to say like, I don't say trophy wife type thing, but yeah, looks are probably way too important for a lot of men. I think there's an element though. There's a certain level of maturity that comes with a man.
Yeah.
I think as men get more mature, and maybe when life is beating them up a little bit, they realize actually looks isn't all that.
But you know? So here, this goes back to my real point, and I'll be very open about this because I've lived everywhere in the world. I've seen every side. I've studied Islam deeply. I've studied Buddhism deeply. I've studied Sikhism deeply. I studied, you know, Christianity, Sufism, everything. I studied, I think, around 12, wow, you know, spiritual teachings. And I admire and adore every one of them. And they all have very different positions on love and romance. But here's the point. The point is, even if you look within Islam itself, you know, the Sunnah would sort of say marriage is for life. It's all about family. It's all about setting sort of the environment for a successful family and making sure that everything is registered and written and so on. Shiat, on the other hand, have the Mut'ah, Sawajil Mut'ah, which basically says, it's almost like, let me date you.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, in a very interesting way, I remember vividly having a conversation with a very dear friend back in the early 2000s, saying that my assistant at the time, a lovely British woman who lived in Dubai and was dating a wonderful Italian man who I know very well, both of them. We went out together many times. And I was wondering, how different is that from an Islamic marriage? Like, they are publicly in front of everyone there together. If they have a child together, everyone sees it that way.
Yeah.
And so it's quite interesting for me, that differentiation.
But I wonder, you're right, by the way, but I wonder, it's the, you know, what's the framework, right? Like, I'm a Muslim, I'm a practicing Muslim, right? Why do I care about this? Why do I believe in it? And I always think it's the framework of when things go wrong. And I always think it from the female perspective, what protects, because if you look at it, you know, within reason, even in modern life, women get a raw deal, right, in a lot of things. And I think this is the same here. What's the female perspective, of during a marriage and if things go wrong in a marriage, what happens afterwards, right? How do kids get looked after? What you know, kind of what protection, or how is she looked after, right? And now, Islamically, if it's done right, and this is the problem,
I was just going to say, I mean...
The problem is exactly that. A lot of Muslims don't do things right, right? So they're not, unfortunately, a good reflection of what the teachings actually are in terms of how you treat women after, if a divorce happens, how you treat the kids, etc.
I mean, my personal example is a very clear example of that. I break up with my wonderful ex for, you know, we were together for 27 years in total. Wonderful woman in every possible way. Dedicated her life to my kids and our kids and our family and so on. And in our marriage certificate, you know, we have something called mu'akhar in Islam, which basically is what she gets paid if we divorce, right? And it was at the time £48,000 with the Egyptian pounds, with in currency exchange rates over time that amounted by the time we were about to break up to $1,500, right? And contractually, if I had stuck to that, that would have been legal, if you but so unethical, right? And I chose, of course, to ask her if she wants me to continue to take care of her expenses and so on, which is really, honestly, what every spiritual faith, including Islam, would encourage you to do, right? So it does break down in terms of you could have all of those agreements in place. And we all know that in the Islamic community, a woman could be deprived of her rights because the laws are so a little ancient.
But this is the thing, right? Remember, Islamically speaking, there's letter of the law, spirit of the law, right? And Islam is very much, it's a mix of both.
Yeah.
But spirit of the law trumps everything. And even, you know, in this scenario, you know, I think there's a verse in the Quran that says, you know, if there's something about her, if you're going to divorce her, leave her in kindness, right? Simple phrase that literally, if Muslim men actually adhered to that in divorce, that would change how divorce is seen, how divorced women are treated, how they're looked after. Because they would be just as concerned about her well-being, her welfare, her protection, her situation as their own, right?
Yeah, that's supposed to be the case.
That's the theory, right? So you're right. In this, let's say this situation, like you said, you know, technically you're right. Inflation, nobody thought about that at the time, right? Inflation, you know, ruined her marker, right?
Yeah.
Like, fine. And you could have said, well, that's what's written. That's all I'm going to give you, right?
Yeah.
Legally, correct. Spirit of the law, if you care about your faith and you're a practicing person, you'd be like, that doesn't sit well because, you know, that's not looking after her in the way that I should owe her, right? And, you know, as you said, all right, what's a more sensible number here? Let's try and get to that of how I can look after you and leave you in kindness, you know? So that's what, for me, the spirit of the law is so important. And remember, that is, if you look at a lot of the Islamic teachings, in everything, not just in marriage, in nearly everything, the spirit of the law or the spirit of pleasing God ultimately, right, steers everything you do and the manner in which you do it. Everything. It's crazy how you can get religion so simple just based on that, in how I treat
others as you would like to be treated.
It literally is.
And it is the 12 spiritual faiths.
Yeah, of course. And they're quite constant between. I'm glad, like, you studied all these. I guarantee you are like, my God, there's a whole constant block. And that's why I do believe all these religions, Buddhism, etc. Ultimately, you know, I was listening to a talk by Sheikh Hamza Yusuf, and I think similar. He's studied Buddhism, Christianity. He was a Christian. I think he was Father Baptist, I can't remember. But he studied all the religions. And he's of the opinion that ultimately, and even elements of Hinduism, all came from the one God, right? They all ultimately came from some place like that and have evolved into the different strands, if you will, that we are now. But the ultimate truths are the same in my eyes.
I'm sure
that's what you found.
I agree. I mean, it's at the end of the day, it all comes down to treat others as you would like to be treated. That's, you know, and in my case, because I have a beloved daughter, I always say, treat a woman as you'd like your daughter to be treated.
Yeah, exactly that. And that's the thing. I'm just thinking, imagine, you know, we mentioned about, you know, a lot of people call it online dating, right? They hate the whole thing. And I always say to people, just be nice to each other, you know? Like, let's say you're talking to someone and they're not for you. Just be nice. Let them know, you know?
I do that very, very... I mean, I'm not on apps anymore, but I did that so openly. I would answer back and say, thank you so much for, you know, being interested in me.
Exactly.
But, you know, this and that don't seem to be a match between us, or I'm not at this stage, or you're looking for this and I'm looking for that.
Exactly. And you just be straightforward. And a lot of women prefer and respect that a lot more. Thank you for being direct. Thank you for being honest.
Yeah.
Great. Because a lot of people aren't. And it just, again, same thing. Just try and treat people. Just be nice to people. Try and treat them as you would like to be treated. Just make it easy. I always say to Muslims, just make it easy for each other. You know, it's hard enough trying to find a partner. Why just be difficult about it and make the process harder for everyone else, you know? So I do think that, like I said, and it comes back to that of ultimately, let's say with the Muslim vein, I'm trying to find a partner, you know, ultimately like to build a family unit, etc., for my own happiness and to please God. That's it. You know, the simplest way you can.
What displeases God?
What displeases God? Well, I'm definitely no scholar on this one. I mean,
forget if you're a Muslim or not. If you want to be ethical, what displeases ethics?
I actually think, and you're probably right, it is causing harm to people or the planet.
Yeah, it's harming others, either physically, mentally, emotionally,
yeah,
or through being dishonest.
Yeah, right?
And I think dating in general is all about that. I think the challenge with dating in a Western world or a Eastern world or in Japan or whatever is that, you know, life is stressful enough as it is.
Yeah.
And you're trying to find an answer to something that you never have experience in, because if you did have experience, you wouldn't be searching for it.
Yeah.
And in a very interesting way, it's just a question of, can you just be very honest and vulnerable and say, look, you know, I'm confused about this and I don't understand that. And like I tell my best friend, can you ask him on the first day if he's actually interested in kids at all?
Mm. Yeah.
So that you don't have to wait 8.5 months.
Exactly, before say, that. Yeah.
And she would always say, oh, but then I would scare him away. And I say, that's exactly the point.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to
You'll scare the wrong kind of people away.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the right one will have an answer.
Yeah. Can I ask you another question? So, I don't want to talk about your app. I don't know the stats of your app.
Yeah, yeah.
And I maybe should not mention the name of the other app. But one of the top apps out there advertised at a point in time and said, every 11 minutes, someone finds a match on our app.
Yeah.
Okay? And of course, the mathematician within me was like, ooh, that's interesting. Okay? Every 11 minutes basically means those many people every year.
Yeah.
And then I went and looked at how many subscribers they have, and I divided how many people per year find a match and how many don't.
Yeah.
And it turns out that 99% of those on the app don't find a match every year.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a very clever tagline for advertising. Every 11 minutes. I think they should say, every 11 minutes, 99% of our subscribers don't find the match. That's the way to say it. Now, how effective is a dating app? And what should people expect?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I mean, like I said, so we're, you know, 9 million members globally. You know, not to go too into it, you know, X 100,000 of them on the app every single day. So far that we know, 500,000 people around the world have actually found their partner, told us they found their partner, left the app, haven't come back. So they're the kind of top level numbers. Now, would that be successful in 9 years? I don't know. It's a bit of a weird one. I would like to think, if I look at like the activity that goes on the app, because anyone can say I've got 9 million members, how many are active? And like you said, have an active profile, are talking to people, are replying to messages, etc. And that number becomes smaller. But if you look at the active people, you know, if I look at it now in terms of the rate at which people are deactivating, telling us they found a partner, it feels quite a healthy rate to me. I think the key, and this is how I've looked at it, right? And it's definitely accelerated, you know, as you would, as we grow, as the pool gets bigger, you'd hope the matching gets better in terms of people finding the one and more people getting married, right? Great. And so we've seen
interesting
that.
Mathematics, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it should go the opposite way.
It should, in theory.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we've seen some of that. Now, if I look at it, for me, it's a tangible impact. You know, I speak to a lot of religious figures and people in the Muslim community, etc. And everyone's talked about, like I said, this crisis. You know, the crisis of the Muslim community is helping young people get married and helping people stay married. They're the two problems we have in the community. Now, everywhere I go, if I go to an event, I usually ask people, put your hand up if you know someone who met and got married on Muzz, or you know, either yourself or you know someone. Nearly always half the room, which is pretty, everywhere I go, and that's not just here, if I go abroad, which is amazing. It blows my mind, honestly. And we're still at a time where people will pretend and not tell people they met on the app, you know? So it's crazy, you know? So that's
honestly, meeting on Muzz is much more cool than my aunt.
I would have thought so. Yeah. All the contrived stories people come up with always makes me laugh. But I'm like, you met on the app, didn't you? So the number of people who I know, and they're like, Shazky, not tell anyone. I'm like, fine, you know, it is what it is. We have people who send us their wedding photos and all that and just say, this is just for your team. Can you not publish it? Because we don't want people to know. Fine. So I know that the real number is probably higher. But for me, that's impact. You know, if I look at it,
definitely.
You know, and remember, before our app, and this is one of the reasons I set it up. Everybody, you know, I was young. When I set the app up, I was 20. Well, technically, 27 or something like that. 27, 28. And I remember I was a banker, right? and in the London professional
God
circles.
God forgives all sins.
I hope so, because Muzz is my ticket out of it, hopefully.
I love all bankers, but it is a very interesting job.
It was soul destroying, I'll tell you that. That's a whole other podcast. Trust me. So for me, I remember at the time, you know, and people laughed at me, including Muslim friends of mine, because they thought, what's this guy? He's quit his job to do this silly app. And remember, apps were not a thing at all. But I remember everyone I heard from was, it's so hard to find someone, you know, and online wasn't a thing as such, you know. It was horrible websites that no one really used. And that was it. That was literally it. And you're relying on parents and you're relying on a family network. And what's strange is, not just here in the West, but even in Muslim countries, the family network, the extended family network, and that whole, call it, arranged process, nowhere near as strong as it used to be.
Absolutely.
You know, we have parents coming to us saying, can you help us find someone for our kids? We don't know anyone. Parents did not see that coming. So we're telling them, just get your kids to sign up, you know, like the phrase of, you know, see where the puck is going. No doubt young Muslims will want to be empowered to find a partner on their own. But the key for us, and this is the way we try and position ourselves, I think the right way that makes me comfortable as well, is you can still do that in a way that's respectful of your faith, of your family, of your tradition. So you find someone on the app, great. Get families involved. You know, that's the best recipe for success for both sides. Get family involved. Get them involved in the process. Don't just do this whole thing alone. You know, it is one thing I think which Muslims should be happy about and cherish is, you know, when two people get together, it is about the families getting together, right? It is all of that. And it's important because that's the unit, hopefully, if they don't interfere, keeps the couple together, supports the couple in the hard times, you know? And I think hopefully helps, like you said, that percentage of, I would say, arranged marriages stay together, you know, much higher than people who go for love marriages and all this kind of stuff. So I think that's the thing. I think one thing for Muslims who are looking for a partner, if you're sensible, attraction is still important. Both looks, personality, all that is super crucial. Of course it is. You know, there's a saying or a hadith, a story in the Prophet's day, peace be upon him, where somebody was getting married to someone and he asked her, have you looked at her face? Literally, have you seen her? Look at her face. He was telling her, you know, he would say, out of modesty, you know, whatever. He was saying, look at her. This is the woman you're going to marry, right? So looks are important, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's how we're built, how we're wired. But that's important. Personality is important. But if Islamic, if you're looking for the one, you're looking at, like you said, when are you looking to have kids? What's your outlook on life? What are your values? You know, it's the base questions. When you have an alignment on that's the glue that keeps you together. The looks and stuff, trust me, it fades so damn quick. Yeah. You know, it really does. And that's the heart of why a couple either works or doesn't work, you know, because hopefully your values are aligned, you respect each other's either difference or similarity of opinion, great, there you go, solid relationship right there, and a mutual sense of respect. So it's interesting. I find, you know, going from banking to this whole field, is so messy, I did not realize how, I was very naive to it. I was naive to Muslim problems when it comes to relationships and the messiness of it all, but just when two people get together, the myriad of things that can happen, good and bad. Yeah. And that, you know, initially, you know, it knocks you back when you hear bad stories of things happening. Of course it does, you know, because you're like, oh man, what have I done? I've built this app that, I don't know, help people just mess around or whatever. But then I always remind myself and always the good stuff that happens. And that's the bit I don't ignore the bad stuff, but that's the bit I focus on, the good stuff.
In a world where artificial intelligence is now upon us, what do you think? How do you think dating will look like with AI?
So here's the bit. So many people have asked me this, and obviously when I was coming on here, I thought about this as well. And I'm cynical. I'm always a cynic with AI. I do think AI has some role. Here's what I don't like about it, especially in, call it, the dating sphere. If you ask anyone what's the problem with dating, they'll say, oh, it's people are inauthentic. They have photos that are very filtered. They give an impression of themselves.
Do they?
Which isn't, you'd be amazed.
Those swipes were on.
You mean everyone doesn't have perfect skin? What? But this is it, right? So everyone has this, they portray this image of themselves. And I've seen mainstream dating apps that we're going to have AI, and there were apps that have been built literally, we're going to have AI to help you start the opening conversation, all that. And in my head, I'm like, my God, this cannot be good. This is now. I don't know how to have this conversation with someone. I'm going to have AI help me. When I get married or if we're together, there's no AI there. It's down to you two. So what that, like, why would you start with this premise of a yet another falsehood or another impression being made, which isn't accurate, you know? One thing, you know, we have on our app, you know, where you submit your photos, we ask you a bunch of questions, we let you write a bio, right? And I'm amazed that a lot of people, men and women, really, they give a lot of attention to the bio. Why? It probably tells you more about a person than all the other bits put together. tells you how they write. Like, so what's the, like, an element of education it gives, or let's say their English or French or whatever, their language, how they describe themselves in a free form way, right? It gives you so many clues about them and their personality just in that bio, right? That imagine if you had AI writing it or whatever, I just feel it detracts from the sincerity of a person. So, and we've navigated this internally. You know, we did a bit of a hackathon internally a couple of weeks back, and one of the things was, well, given we're asking you all these questions, we could use AI, ChatGPT, to write your bio for you. And they proved it, and it does. And it writes a good bio. And I like it in principle.
Of someone else,
right? I like it in principle, but I'm like, so I'm just imagining a girl matches with this guy because she's like, oh, that's a really great bio. Like, I mean, look, it's so thoughtful, blah, 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 blah. They speak to the guy and the guy can't string two sentences together. It's a waste of time, you know? It's like you've got them through the initial bit of the funnel and it's a disaster at the other end. I think the heart of it is, and this is the key, and this is what we're trying to solve. And if AI can help on this, amazing. And I think it can to some degree. I always look at dating apps or art app from a female's perspective, because I genuinely think, and this is just what I've learned in time, solve it for women, men will put up with nearly anything. And that's the cold truth. It's true. It's the cold truth. Women are, like I said, women are a lot more serious. They have a lot more intent. They know what they're looking for the most part. I'm generalizing, but this is what I've observed. Men are nowhere near, they don't have such high conviction on a lot of those things. And like you said, men are very visual. They'll put up with a lot of different things.
I think it's because what's at stake is much higher for a woman.
Of course. No question. Yeah. So I always think, how do I solve it for women? And one of the things, literally, I've got to catch up with the team and I put it in for, I think it's next week or the week after, a whole day brainstorming. And I said, if we were to imagine an app that solved this problem for women of how do I, and the common thing I always hear from women, how do I spot a serious guy? Right? That's the, like, if you ask a Muslim woman, non-Muslim woman on any dating app, that's the question I'll ask. How do I spot if you're serious or not? Right? If I can solve that one question as much as I possibly can, and the flip side for us as a company, you know, really putting the customer first, if I, as a company, did not care about revenue, did not care about retention, did not care about any of these things, if I wanted to solve the actual problem, what would we do? Because I actually think you would build a very different product.
I agree. I think in the age of AI, you could simply say, like literally, the app, you wouldn't need to sign up. You just give us your social media profiles.
Yep.
And then, yeah, every now and then we may send you a question or two and ask you to answer them in a voice message or in a little essay. And that's it. Eventually, we can simply say, hey, we think this person is a good match for you. Do you want to go meet them? It's almost like two very good friends.
Yeah. You know? I think there's an element of that. But here's the other bit I find, and this is where AI could be interesting, in learning about you, right? Because I think
exactly.
This is the bit. And what I mean by that is the way you use an app, the way you might like on a particular profile, the way you might talk to different people, et cetera. I think AI could get quite smart at figuring out truly what you're interested in. Like what you might say what you're interested in your filters, but what you actually interact with is quite different or can be different, right?
Yeah.
So truly understanding that. Secondly, understanding the kinds of people or the kinds of conversations that you seem to like and trying to match you with people who match along those lines as well. So it would get a good element or an idea of how, I would say within reason, how serious you are and how you interact.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot that you get to know from the way we behave online.
Yeah, of course.
Pretentious as it is, I mean, recently, a few months ago, I was approached by a gorgeous young Instagram influencer. You know, I don't have time to look at Instagram and on. Anyway, we chatted a couple of times and then, you know, we decided to meet. And it was, I think, an epic first date, really, in many ways. But then eventually you realize that maybe there is a mismatch. You know, I'm not that much of a Gen Z myself. Instagram influencers in general have to behave regardless of where they are in life as a Gen Z. Nothing wrong with Gen Z's listening. But, you know, Instagram is very pretentious in many ways. And it could have been very simple if an AI highlighted to me, by the way, we don't think this is a good match because, right? But it's happening. I think what is also happening, which sadly is going to, in my view, be very real, is that the way a man or a woman, a potential partner, is perceived is going to be reshaped negatively by AI. Because, you know, just like if you imagine face filters being so prominent now, it's not only that you're being fooled by the ones that are more attractive than they are in reality, you're also sort of like, oh, but if everyone in the world is so attractive because of the filters, yep, then why is this genuine one so unattractive, yep, in comparison, yeah, even though the genuine one is probably the most attractive, yep, of all of them. But I also think that this now with ChatGPT and the likes, you know, language models in general hacking the human operating system of language, I think that would become the next filter,
yep,
where the machines would write and flirt and yep, create yeah, friends yep, better yep, than humans, yep, basically. So
and that's a depressing.
Yeah, really, it's quite, like, it's it really quite concerning.
Like, anyone you know who talks about, oh, like, you know, we've looked at a thing now of, you know, like, oh, icebreakers. How do we help you start the conversation? And it's always a tough one because I'm like, and some people need help. You know, I can appreciate that. Some people need. I'm like, I'm lost for how to start this thing. Great. Writing it almost for you and giving an impression, I think, is misleading. And so yeah, I'm very conscious of this. I don't want to do that where, you know, we make, because you're right, it's almost like a filter for looks. So you've got photo filter, which is a visual yeah, impression, which is different.
It's a
personality filter, yeah, you know? Oh, what a nice, pleasant, thoughtful guy I'm getting to know. Okay, yeah, really, no, he's narcissistic and quite selfish.
Yeah.
But there
yeah,
you go, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
so it's a whole new set of problems. And this is why I think sometimes, and you see it, you know, people want to plug AI or any new technology into everything, right? Blockchain, shove it in everything, you know, whether it's a need for it or not. And I think same with AI, right? Because wherever there's VC interest and there's a hype
exactly,
right now.
It gets you invested, yeah.
Of course, you know, you just throw it into it, shove AI in. I've got investors saying to me, oh, what do you think about AI with your app? Yeah. I'm like, it's just because 6 months, if people are still talking about AI in the way they are now, they might still be, but you'll talk about something else, you know, and is that how fleeting this is, right? So I always worry about these things. I always let the hype die down and then see where's the actual value,
yeah,
you know, and I still remember somebody had a blockchain for dating. I remember, and I was thinking, what on earth? Like, what is this? Like yeah, your relationship history, out there on a ledger for everyone. I have no idea.
On an open ledger.
I'm like, come on,
yeah,
guys. Like, do we need
encryption?
It? You know, yeah, so yeah, it makes me laugh sometimes, but there you go.
It is definitely an interesting time because I think the core problem at its very, very deep end is not resolved at all. And throwing more technology at it yeah, is not going to change anything. Yeah. It is true, however, that we are in an age where, yeah, I mean, I am very much into an intellectual, you know, very intelligent woman. Mm. And I have to admit, the more refined conversations are becoming using AI, the more humanity becomes like, it doesn't seem that she read 2.1 trillion gigabytes of data. So
of course. Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah. Which is how we are beautifully human. Mm. And it's quite eye-opening for me.
And I do think, this is like, you know, this is when you step back from the relentless, I don't want to say rise, the relentless role that technology's impact is having on our lives, right? You know, and dating apps are just one part if you look at the whole relationship spectrum, right? It's only growing in its impact on our lives. Yet, you know, all the stats show, as it does show, people feel more alone, more depressed, more whatever
correct,
than ever, right? Why? Our nature, our human nature, the way we're built is to be with people. It's to interact with people. It's to be around. We're social creatures, right? It's to be around people. And I don't care what people say. The danger of all these online platforms, what they do is they lock you into this online world where you're not spending time with people, yeah, which actually, one, no doubt helps your mental health and your well-being, and one doesn't, you know, for a long... It's like everything in moderation.
Yeah.
And all of these other things in technology, and none of them are built with moderation in mind at all, you know? They're built with addictive qualities in mind, et cetera, et cetera, right? They're businesses, of course they are. That's the way they're built. That's a big, for me, that's something that we need to consciously think about. And that's why for us, it's how do we actually get people to meet? Some of the things that we have and we're literally thinking about is, do we have intentionally a cut-off on conversations? So we don't want you just chatting endlessly on the app because it serves no one. Get to a phone call, get to a video call, meet up, you know, like have something productive at the end of this. For me, similar thing with the whole remote working thing. You know, I remember, you know, we've gone on the whole journey of remote working and now, you know, we were 5 days in the office, then obviously COVID, remote working, and now we're hybrid. For me, hybrid was so important because I could see, especially for young people and young members of our team, being alone, you know, let's say in London, right? You're in a flat and a lot of people, they don't have a study and a bedroom. The bedroom is a study, right? You wake up, you're working in the same room. You don't leave that room. You don't talk to anyone. Everything's on a Google Meets or whatever. This is not good, you know, it literally is.
Long term,
not
yeah,
good. And it's for me, it was the, you know, the human element, which I thought for everyone's well-being, it's so important. We have to meet up. You know, we're done with this fully remote setup. We're not going to do that. And we don't, so we're hybrid now. And, you know, we've been pushing more and more towards the hybrid model. Why? For me, it's the human connection, so important. Creativity, all of that, but actually, just for your own health. So if I look at it, if you were a brutal business person, you would say, technically, probably they're more productive when they're working remotely, right? Because they're at home, that's all they're doing, etc. Great, great for a business. I'm getting stuff done. For their well-being, and I think for creativity, nah, it's way worse.
Yeah.
You know, long-term, bad. And that's why, for me, we've gone hybrid. So yeah. That's just one example. I think where technology, great, but let's not go too far. And you have to frame it in a context where people live, you know, in the West, at least, in big cities, weirdly lonely lives, very lonely lives. And this is an epidemic, no question, in terms of the effects of all of that.
Is there any way a dating app would sort of also collect the failure data? I mean, one thing I wanted to write, I wrote the notes of what was a book called Good Boys Win.
Mm.
The idea that obviously in the dating and romance world, if you're a bad boy, you're more likely to succeed.
Yeah, yeah.
And that maybe there is a way to show a good man who has good elements to appear on the app or at work or in the sports club or whatever in a way that makes them more successful and more seen, so that they get chances and accordingly women get good men and so on and so forth. But I don't think the cycle is completed anywhere. Like, you go on a dating app, you find someone, you swipe, you chat a little bit, you meet, you may end up dating for a while, you may end up not dating for a while. But at the end of the day, when you go back to the app, you have zero learning.
Yeah,
you have no idea why it didn't work and you're starting again. Is that something that's doable?
Yeah, so I do think it's doable. Like, one thing we're talking about internally is, like, how can we be a bit more, I don't say peer-to-peer rated, but something like that, where, you know, getting back to the question, let's say for me as a woman, how do I find a serious man, right?
Yeah.
And how do I do it? Well,
there was an app that did this once where it allowed women to rate men dated.
And every man
was crap.
Yeah, that's one problem. The date is not great. Oh, it's kind of interesting because way back when, I remember I built this thing where, you could rate positive and negatively. Uh-huh. And what we found was men and women were horrible to each other. So they would give each other bad rating. And equally, somebody in the team said this, if you're a woman, you're talking to a good guy, do you want to rate him highly to help other women?
Exactly,
it's complicated and it's interesting at the same time. But I do think there's an element of how can a community, I do think they can identify who the good guys are and who the not so good guys are. How do you do that in a way that doesn't offend anyone, but that equally is visible to people? Because what you don't want, and this is what we had in a very early version, it would say, all the ratings say that you as a man are not serious and that's on your profile. Now, are you going to stick around if your profile says, I'm not serious and, you know, no one recommends me? No. And because people were being unfair, we were like, we can't have that. And we got rid of it very quickly. But I always wanted to come back to it because I was like, we have to solve this somehow. So I do think there's an element, like you said, of how do you reward good behavior? How do you identify it? I think the learning bit is what's interesting. And that's a much harder thing. I don't know how well. So actually, I'll give you kind of an example. We're building this new feature. We call it virtual speed dating. So for me, it's like, do people just want to be on an app swiping left, right, and center? I don't think so. You know, if I look five, 10 years down the line, is that what people are still going to be doing? I would hope not. What is the future? You know, and so we're trying different things of how to bring people together without them being judgmental, etc. Like I said, using some of the smarts that we have. One of the things we built is virtual speed dating. So it's an event for an hour. We connect you on a 5-minute phone call with a different person every 5 minutes. So 5 minutes, you have a window, phone call, not video, phone. You barely get any of their profile up front. So you're having to have the conversation to find out about them. At the end of the call, you can then decide, do I like them? Would I want to chat to them? Great. And then you can chat after the event. What we found, which was really interesting. So, and in our matching, we're genuinely trying to match you to good people. So we've got a way of getting everyone into a waiting room. We then rank everyone based on your profile, their profile, your filters, their filters, the whole thing. And then try and find you an ideal match. What we found was, for men and women who participated, and again, focus on the women, women were liking twice as many people as they were when they were swiping. So if they were swiping like 1 in 11, they were liking like 1 in 5 here, you know? So it's tangible. That's a big, big difference, right? So
because you're talking to a human.
Because you're talking to a human, you're giving them a chance. And, you know, if they just saw the photo and a name and maybe profession, whatever, they'd probably be like, no, thanks. They had a conversation and they were probably like, no, the guy was actually right. It was a nice phone call. He came across well. yeah, let's chat and let's see where this goes. Great. It's more authentic. It's more genuine. So for us,
that's such a cool idea.
And that, so we've literally built it and we're scaling it up. So we've already done a few events in the UK, in the US. We're going to be scaling this up globally. And the key for us is, and we track all the metrics of an event. So we're tracking how often women are hanging up very quickly. So let's say we match you, you're on a phone call, and then, and actually it's kind of even, but women generally hang up more than men. But for women who hang up, why are they hanging up so quickly? So we've literally built in there. What did you not like? Was it their looks? Was it personality? Were you just not matched because of age? What was it? You know, and so hopefully we can start learning what they don't like, you know, what the things, and it helps us match better. So I do think there's an element of, you know, like I said, you have, and again, you know, like I said, if you were to build an app and you didn't care about retention, you didn't care about revenue and this kind of stuff, you wouldn't have this model where you're like pass, because that's just convenience. That's why you have like pass. It's the simplest way you can digest one binary bit of data at any one time, right? Now, if you instead said, you could still have that model, but when you like someone, why did you like them? When you pass on someone, why did you pass on them? And imagine all of that data from everyone.
I wish that was true.
So, and the problem is
in my highly organized mind.
Of course, and you're an engineer. I'm an engineer.
Yeah, I know exactly why I would pass on someone.
Exactly, right? And you would not, and so you would categorize AI, if you will, would actually learn about you in a much better way than trying to infer. Right. Yeah. So you would have all these data points, because equally, imagine you have a man's profile, just for argument's sake, and there a ton of women, the biggest proportion of women, have passed on him and said his profile doesn't come across serious, or for XYZ reason, he doesn't come across as genuine. Imagine you could feed that back to him and say, all right, there's high reports that people are saying you don't come across serious or genuine. Here's ways you can improve your profile genuinely. Helpful, right? Helpful all around. I actually think that's a way better way of doing it. Now, like I said, if you didn't care about retention and revenue.
That's reinforcement learning.
Exactly,
basically. Yeah.
Exactly. And yeah. Here's the problem. Exhaustion. Imagine I'm not interested in this guy, right? Man or woman. I don't owe him. Why do I owe him? I don't owe him anything. Why am I going to take my time to rate this guy? Knowing that women, like I said, will pass on 10 in 11 profiles, right? They're going to pass on them. Are they going to invest that time on each one
Definitely
of those 10?
Not.
Definitely not. How do you solve it? And these are the hard problems, right? So you
solve it by telling them, but if you give us feedback, we're not going to show you people like that anymore.
You could. But then you have the real, and this is why any app is really difficult to build. There's a sweet spot of so many things. You could do that. You have their exhaustion and them saying, I can't be bothered, I'm out of here. And so they leave. So you've lost a customer or lost someone, and now you're learning nothing because you've lost someone. So,
but you know, there are so many of those pointers. Like, the worst female profiles I ever see are the ones that are entirely written in the negative.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're this, don't talk to me. If you're that, swipe left. If you're
it's
this,
quite aggressive in the no's.
Yeah, very aggressive. Yeah. Very.
There's nothing inviting.
I'm a goddess. I hate all of you, and yet I am here.
Yeah.
And you know,
I think there's a lot of male ones. Same thing.
Yeah.
Don't want a woman who does this. It's a whole checklist of all the things they don't want in a woman, and it's like. I always say, how is that remotely inviting to anyone?
Like, exactly.
It's fine saying these are the things I'm not looking for. Mm-hmm. Be nice about the things that you are looking for.
Exactly.
Like,
that is by definition very, very concrete data. It's like, first of all, you can either use it and say, I'm not going to show you anyone that is like that. Or you can sort of feed back to him or her and say, by the way, you can write those in a positive sense. And here is how it is. And you'll get more matches that way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But this is I was saying, as an app developer, a platform developer, this is the bit that you're trying to juggle, is the mechanics of it. Yeah. Because, again, so many things, and we've come up with so many crazy ideas, they sound amazing in theory, and in reality, you're like...
It's very complex,
And it's not. So people have said to me, oh, Shazzy, you should just do X, Y, Z. And I enjoy this conversation. You know, I get stopped in the street with feedback, right? It's great. Because, you know, thankfully, we're
big. I haven't found my match yet. Can you please improve the app?
Trust me, I get that as well. Yeah. So people literally stop me in the street and give me feedback whether I want it or not. And I enjoy it because sometimes I'll present a scenario. Why don't you just do this? And I always say, all right, let's walk this through. And I walk through all the things. And by the end, they're like, okay, I get it. Why? Like, I get why it's so difficult. And it is. You're trying to solve something that works for men, works for women. Doesn't exhaust you, keeps you interested, doesn't make the whole thing laborious and negative, except there's so many things. You know, it's. I always say finding a partner is a very emotional journey. For women especially, it's an emotionally draining journey. You know, I always think, you know, and you see it, you know, if you look in the data, women will leave the app and come back 10 times more than men do. They'll literally leave, take a break, for a month and then come back. Why? Because they get very emotionally invested when they get to know someone. Rejection, if that happens. The whole thing, it takes a toll. Of course it does. You know, there's a mental element of getting to know a different person that comes with this territory. So I do think, and that's something that we're, you know, conscious about. How do we, like I said, how do you help women in this whole scenario, right? Yeah. In this whole dynamic of trying to find a partner. And it's difficult. It's difficult.
It is a very complex problem to solve. If you were to give three top tips for people who want to find someone who matches them on a dating app.
Number one, I always say just be serious. You'll be amazed. That alone, and be honest in your communication, that alone sets you apart from so many people. Somebody asked me, for guys, how should we make our profile decent? And I said, it's so sad. The bar is so low for men. Like, literally, all you have to do, wear a photo with a shirt on. You know, be presentable. Speak just seriously or sensibly about whatever you're looking for. That alone, that'll boost your success rate, you know, tenfold. Things like that. So I definitely say be serious. I'd say have some genuine thought over what you're actually looking for. Like, what are your deal breakers? Genuine deal breakers. You shouldn't have thousands of them. There should be five that are really important that you're like, hell no, this is not for me. Stick to them. Because what you don't want to do is waste someone's time.
Absolutely.
And then be like, actually, that deal, you know, to be honest, you were really nice, like you were really attractive, whatever, but you got a kid and not interested. Why waste her time, you know? So have those, if that's a deal breaker for you, be upfront and stick to it. Equally, know the things that you are looking for. And be happy if you get most of them, you know? Yeah. I think that's actually sensible. One thing you find is people start off with a really long list, and then the older and more single they get, that list does get trimmed down. And, you know, there's no need, right? And this is, maybe it's a human thing that you want it all and you realize
you can't
have it
all. The mathematics of it is incredible. People don't understand that, you know, if you're looking for, you know, someone, for something in someone and it's available in 1 in 10, and then you're looking for another thing that's available in 1 in 10, it's not, you're not looking at 1 in 20
exactly,
now, you're looking in 1 in 100.
Exactly.
To add another
to the power,
thing.
Exactly.
To the power
and
of,
that's the
right?
thing. And you're dead right. I still remember in the early days, we used to have in a section of the app where you could set your filters. And it used to be, you had, I think, 15 different filters that you could set. And I remember that this lady emailed me directly, a long complaint. Oh, your app is useless, can't find anyone, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, my God. So I looked at her filters and literally...
14 of the 15.
Oh, yeah. It was literally within 6 miles, has to have a beard, has to be a doctor or a dentist, has to be of this particular sex, have to be of this narrow age range, this particular height, etc. And I literally replied back going, literally, you want all of this within 6 miles and they have to be on the app and they have to match with you. And I said, does none of this seem remotely unreasonable? I said, focus, what's actually important to you? Is the fact that they're between these 4 inches of height really that important? Is that age gap, can that be bigger, et cetera, et cetera?
I mean, honestly, if I were you, I would just save the men
and
leave her profile as it is, honestly.
You know, that's the thing. This is like what you're navigating. And like I said, the older men and women get, then they realize actually some of that stuff isn't important. What's actually important? And, you know, I guess it's easier for everyone if you start having those lessons a lot earlier. You know, realizing, you know, how do you sensibly get to know people? Like I said, so I think being serious, having intention about it and being clear with the other person what your intention is. Honesty. I think that just saves everyone's time and actually garners you a lot more respect. People have a lot more respect for you. Yeah. On day one, if you imagine you met someone on day one and said, by the way, this is what I'm looking for up front.
Yeah, you know, I will tell you openly when I was on dating apps, being honest, whichever way. Honest that in saying I want something serious or being honest in saying I'm not ready for something serious, both ways got me more matches.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think if people, and that, what does that require? It requires you actually putting some thought into it.
Yeah.
You know, like thinking about it, saying, all right, this is where I'm at. Okay, guys, this is where I'm at. A lot of people don't even go into that journey. They jump on, want to find, I'm single, I feel alone. Great, I'm going to jump onto an app. Disaster. Okay, I'm single, I'm alone. What am I actually looking for right now? Am I ready? Am I, you know, let's say I'm not Muslim, do I want someone to move in? What kind of relationship do I want, etc. That's the thought process you need to have before you even download an app, you know? Because I just think it saves everyone time. And I always say, imagine if everyone did that, I think apps, you know, the bad web that apps have, it would be so much more effective.
Yeah.
And apps probably would
cater
to that.
That's a very interesting way of stating the fact. Mm. There's nothing wrong with the app. There is a lot wrong with the behavior of people on the app.
And I do think somebody else...
there is a little wrong with the app.
By the way, even though I'm an app, I do think some of the mechanics of the way apps work, I don't like. I have to admit, and I'm an app developer, right? And I built Muzz, etc. And there's some bits I'm like sometimes I'm really like, is that what we had? We needed this thing to do this? Whatever, you call it a failing of people, I don't know. But I do think there's there's an aspect of, like I said, the role that apps play, the way we use apps, and the role of people and the way we use it. So some people say to me, oh, you know, ghosting and all this kind of stuff that is, you know, endemic on apps, on dating apps particularly. And I always say this for me is a pro and a con, right? One of the beauty of online, right, of social media, of social networks, all this kind of stuff is, you know, I could find you on Twitter and send you a message, right? Never met you, don't know you, and you might actually reply, right? That's the power of online. So damn easily, I can reach out and make a new connection with someone, right? So easily. I don't owe you anything. Never met you. I'm never going to meet you, let's say, right? Great. That's the beauty of it. The reverse side is, because of all of that, because of the ease of making the connection, the ease at which I can end that connection or ignore that connection, right? Mm-hmm. I don't owe you anything. Why should I reply? Or I might reply, but then ghost you after that. Easy come, easy go. And that's just the reality of online. Imagine now the flip side where a friend of yours is like, oh, Shaz, you really need to meet Mo. He's a close friend of mine. He'll help you with XYZ, or he might be able to help you with XYZ. Great. I reach out, and now I'm under an obligation because someone's introduced us. I'm not going to ghost you because now there's a third party, effectively, someone who can vouch for both of us, where there's reputation on the line, there's all this stuff, right? So there's a bit more work involved in getting this connection going. Great. There's going to be more work involved in ending that connection, right?
Yeah.
And I just think that's people have to just, whether we like it or not, accept it, right?
Yeah.
How can we make it better? Being a bit kinder online, right? And that's the thing. So I do think everyone blames platforms. There's a lot we can, like I said, if you be nice to each other and you encourage that, these platforms will be a much nicer place. And I do think there's an element of platforms bringing out the worst in people.
Correct. Yeah, when you hide behind the screen.
Of course.
This has been fascinating.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed this conversation.
Oh my God, that's, I mean, of course, as you can see, both of us and our software background.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
we're both geeks at heart.
We geek out at it. Yeah.
Looking at it from a data science perspective, you know?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I don't know if we lost our audience a long time ago. Probably the batteries died and everything.
Cool, no.
It was a lot of fun, man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, this was cool. And you guys, I hope you enjoyed this. You know, theoretically, it's about dating and love and romance.
Somewhere in all of that.
Yeah, exactly. But we spoke about religion and religious backgrounds and, you know, differences between cultures and, you know, different features that you can include and not include. But I think most importantly, I wanted to have this conversation to tell you it's actually not wrong for someone to say, look, I am a Muslim, or I am in that stage of my life, or I am, and you know, struggling with this season of my desires, and basically say openly, this is what I want. And when you say this is what I want vulnerably and openly, you do lose 90% of those who don't, you know, match you, basically. And that's a good thing. And I think the reality of the matter is that maybe be positive in terms of saying this is what I want, not saying this is what I do not want more often, because sometimes those profiles, honestly, I sometimes go like, can I please send her a message to tell her no one will take you when you're, or him if you're, you know, if you're a man doing this. No one will take you when you're so negative about I don't want this and I don't want that. But I think the whole idea here is there is a big game of knowing you before you go out there looking for someone who would accept or be interested in you. Very, very complex world, the world of dating and dating apps. But there you go. I really enjoyed this conversation, and it got me thinking again about a lot of the things that go into that complex economic model of dating and romance. Yeah, whatever it is that you're doing today, if you are interested to find a partner, I think what I will ask you to do is to slow down a bit this week and get to know yourself, get to know what you want, and then go out there asking for a partner. Whatever you do, regardless of how busy you are this week, slow down a little bit, because there's always a little bit of time to slow down. I love you all for listening, and I will see you next time.